All right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. I got to be awake. So do you. All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming out this morning. I appreciate it. I know there were a lot of good parties on last night. I wasn't at any of them, unfortunately. But the good news is my demos work. If the internet stays up. All right, so we actually have quite a bit of stuff to cover this morning, so I'm going to go ahead and dive right into it. We'll try to do some Q&A afterwards if we have some time. If not, track me down in the halls or out in the exhibit hall. I'm really hard to find. I blend right into the crowd. Difficult to pick out. For those of you who don't know me already and would like to contact me on some method other than face-to-face, here is all my information that you may need to know. Yes, that is my actual license plate on my truck. There I am on, there's my email address. If you want to send me an email, please put SPC12 in the title so it doesn't go right into the round bin. You can try me on Facebook and Twitter if you like. The friends I have in this audience will tell you that's not the most effective way to get a hold of me. To me, social involves a pint. It doesn't involve sitting at my computer. But you can certainly give it a go, or you can leave a comment on my blog. A couple things I want to point out, since we have quite a few developers in the audience this morning. I know 2013 is the new hotness, but a lot of us are still writing apps for SharePoint 2010. And there are some add-ons that you need to have to get your work done. The first one is CKS Dev. If you're not using CKS in your SharePoint 2010 solutions, shame on you. You're wasting a lot of time. Go into the Visual Studio Solution Gallery, search for CKS, and add it to Visual Studio. It extends the out-of-the-box tools with a lot of nifty, cool stuff that you're going to need. Second of all, if you're doing any complex programming in SharePoint 2010, you'll want to take a look at the Patterns and Practices guidance that we developed for the last rev cycle. There's a ton of code in there that you can steal, I mean reuse in your applications, and covering all sorts of advanced topics on 2010. All right, so I know we were all out late, or some of you were out late. I was sitting in the hotel room late working on demos, but you all were having fun last night, I assume, I hope, more fun than I was anyway. Click. There we go. Doing whatever it is you were doing. Where is my missing image? Hang on a second here. Ah, there's the funny part. There you go. All right, our little green friend is going to be with us throughout the presentation today, imparting some nuggets of wisdom to you. But he figured you would be a little bit slow on the uptake this morning, and then we might have to motivate you. So he gave me a little device here to help get you in the mood of the presentation. So if you fall asleep, as the people who were in my session yesterday will tell you, you will be attacked with the wand of motivation. For those of you who sat in the front row, that might not have been such a great idea. All right. I will use this. Okay. Let's carry on. All right. So here's our, back up for a second. Here's our agenda for today. We are going to walk through a set of demos that we built for technical product marketing to showcase the app model in SharePoint 2013. And our thinking was, it's okay to create just sort of one-off demos. There's a lot of sample code that you can already download online and look at how that's built. But what we wanted to do is take an application that would apply to just about every enterprise. And so we kicked around some ideas and we thought, you know, everybody has a help desk. We had the most popular of the Fab 40 templates back in 2007 was the help desk template. So we thought, why don't we re-envision that for 2013? Figure out how to build a help desk application with a modern UI that takes advantage of all the SharePoint 2013 app model goodness. But we didn't want to stop just there. That's okay to have as part of the story, but we really wanted to have a full end-to-end story. We wanted to include apps for Office as part of this story because it's something you're going to be working with in the 2013 cycle at some point. And we also wanted to do some mobile integration and get a little phone app action going on. The one thing we did not do is any Win8 apps at the time because I only have so many hours in a day to write code, and that was just too much for me to bite off. So what we're going to look at is a SharePoint 2013 app, an Office app, and a phone app. I'm going to walk you through how we built it end to end and give you some nuggets of wisdom, things that you'll need to know as you're building your own apps in 2013. So let's start a little bit with what it is we were actually trying to achieve when we built this application. So here's our spec list. Obviously, we had to start with a cool web application. It's going to do what all help desk applications do. It's going to handle assignment and tracking of issues. We wanted to include some cool geolocation features. So if you have users submitting issues to you and engineers working those issues, you can see where they are on a map and get some visual information about them. We also wanted to pull some data out of the user profiles in SharePoint 2013, so we have a nice integration story there, and leverage the search capabilities in 2013 as well. Secondarily, we wanted to build this in the cloud, obviously. So we have an Azure SQL database running in the background that holds all of our help desk data. It runs in an Azure web role. And interestingly enough, we built it so it runs both on-prem and in Office 365. So a little bit later, we're going to talk about some of the challenges of building on-prem apps when it comes to trying to configure authorization. And I'll walk you through some stuff on that piece, which leads us right into the OAuth portion, which is how we handle authorization in the cloud from Office 365. To our application. On the desktop for the Office app, we wanted to, instead of building some reporting functions into the app itself, we decided instead to do them as an Office app and bring our data into Excel where it could then be manipulated. We wanted to have a nice little task pane so it was integrated with Excel in a handy little Office app to give us our reporting capabilities. And finally, we have the mobile piece. We want engineers to be able to track issues on their phone, be able to see where their users are who have submitted issues, be able to respond to those issues from the mobile device, and also to get push notifications when things change in the app so that they see them on their Windows device. All right, so let's moving on to the design. There's a distinctly different design process in SharePoint 2013 when you, as a lead developer or as a team lead, have to think about how you're going to sit down and construct applications in the SharePoint 2013 framework. It's a little bit different than what we've done in the past, and our advice from our friend here is very appropriate. There is much that we must unlearn in order to move forward in SharePoint 2013 app development. You have to think differently about how you construct your applications. You're now thinking about not running code inside of a SharePoint context, but running code completely outside of a SharePoint context and somehow being able to exchange data back and forth between the two, including user identity. It's a little bit tricky. The first thing we have to envision, like in any app, is the UI. How are users going to interact with this application? Where is it going to reside? How is it going to function, etc.? How are we going to authorize these users? In 2013 app development, in most cases, you're going to be doing remote webs or self-hosted webs or provider-hosted webs. They all mean the exact same thing. What it means is it's running off the box. It's not on SharePoint. Users log into SharePoint, then they go over to your app, right? Well, if we have them logging in both places, that's not really a good cohesive story. We need a better way to manage it than that. So we have to think through how we're going to manage our authentication and authorization in our application. How are we going to exchange data? How are we going to talk to SQL? SQL's up in the cloud. How are we going to communicate with it from apps that are mostly running JavaScript? We need a way to do that, and the way we'll do that is WCF and REST. REST, incidentally, is also the way we're going to communicate with SharePoint. There's a little trick you need to know in 2013 apps, and that is there are two ways to host an app, essentially, in SharePoint and out of SharePoint. In SharePoint, you can host apps in a client part, you can host them in an app web, but you are running inside of a SharePoint context even though you're consuming data from outside. In that context, the JavaScript object model will function. As soon as you run off box in a provider or self-hosted apps, the JavaScript object model no longer functions. So you have to use the .NET client-side object model and REST in order to exchange data with SharePoint. All right, and then the Office apps are purely a JavaScript-driven model. This is entirely new for the 2013 wave. It's actually very easy to work with, and if you're used to doing, if you've done any of the JavaScript object model stuff in SharePoint 2010, it will be really familiar to you, even though it is for Office. The phone development, there's not really anything completely new here. The stuff we'll be looking at will be for Windows Phone 7 and 7.5, not for Windows Phone 8, but there's nothing really new on that development story. What we will be doing in the phone app development is leveraging the other pieces of our architecture. So we have RESTful services and WCF talking to SQL that our phone app is going to leverage in order to consume that data. All right, so let's dig into the functionality of how this actually works, and let's start with the biggest piece of the pie, and that is what we're going to do with data. That's my favorite quote of all of them. That shows you're a true developer. If you like that quote, you're a true developer. If you don't, you're an admin. Get out of here. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Okay. Right, so let's start with Azure SQL Database. How many of you to date have built any applications on Azure? Let me see the hands. All right, a few. That's very good. All right. So Azure SQL databases, they're pretty straightforward. It's SQL running in the cloud. There's two versions, a web and a business version. Web is a small 1 to 5 gig. Business version can go up to 150 gig. And you pay as you go for the amount of data that you consume in SQL. The interesting piece about working with SQL databases in Azure is that you don't have the full SQL manager experience. You can't right click, you know, edit top 200 rows and do that sort of stuff. It's all T-SQL, right? So if your T-SQL is a little bit rusty, you're gonna have to brush up on it for working with SQL in the cloud. In order to talk to SQL from a remote perspective, we need a way to do that. WCF is the right way to go. In talking to SQL, it's certainly not the only way to go. There's other options that you can use, but personally I prefer the WCF approach for its structure. I'm a fan of the Entity Framework. You may be not. That may not be. That's okay. But in this particular scenario, I had about 150 stored procedures that I needed to deal with. I certainly wasn't going to code up every one of those by hand inside of my solution. So using the Entity Framework allows me to RAD that and generate all of my stored procedures and wire everything together. Jason, our new friend Jason. He used to be a scary guy in a mask. Jason is still a little scary, to be honest with you. So we're going to be doing a lot of data transfer with Jason. The XML days are pretty much gone. You can still do XML HTTP if you wish and exchange XML data back and forth. And if you're doing the Office piece, you can do Office XML. But most of what you're going to be working with is JSON. The RESTful services in SharePoint 2013 will return JSON objects to you, so you need to get familiar with parsing JSON and dealing with JSON objects. And then finally, everything is asynchronous. The only pieces that are synchronous are in the .NET client-side object model. Everything is async back and forth. So it takes a little bit of an adjustment if you haven't done a lot of async programming to get used to all of that back and forth that goes on with the async. So let's look quickly at the underlying data model for the application. Now, bear in mind, what we're trying to achieve here is actually relatively simple. We have issues, we need to track issues, we need to assign people to those issues, we need to update statuses, have notes, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, it's not that simple, but it's simple enough, right? And so we don't have a horribly confused data model, but we do have one that requires us to put in a little bit of effort on it. And as I mentioned to you, it's got a whole bunch of stored procedures because that's how I roll. And where are my function imports? There they are all. Boom. Certainly wasn't going to write all those by hand. So here's my data model. Now, the interaction with the data model from a code perspective is actually very simple. We have a data service here in our solution. No, thank you, TFS. We have a data service here in our solution. Right, you can see it down here. Here's our data service and then our data associated data contracts with it. We have two types of methods. We have gets and posts. We decorate those with our JSON attributes because we're going to be taking JSON requests and issuing JSON responses, and it's either a get or a post. For a get, all we have to do is pass in some parameters, call our stored procedure, return our parameters in the right format. For a post, we have to construct a JSON object and match it to a data object. So let's look at how this is built. Now, let me qualify this first of all, by saying this is the pattern that I came up with when working through this application. This isn't necessarily the pattern that you're going to use or any type of best practice. But what I found was, now that I've done a couple of apps since I built this, is this pattern is actually very fast and repeatable once you get used to it. When you're invoking the entity framework, as you can see here, you're instantiating your entity framework. Then you're calling your function imports from your entity framework. As you can see here, those are returning enumerable objects that we then put into a JSON syntax. Now, this is important. You have to remember how to do the setup for your JSON syntax that you're going to be returning. That's what your JavaScript is going to be looking for. And then you have to serialize it so you get the result.d and all the JSON goodness. Once you've done that, this exact same pattern repeats throughout every one of the methods, right? So we have a structured process that we can use. We always know what our inputs and outputs are going to be. When we have to construct a post operation, it's slightly more complex, but not really. We create a, here it is, here's a web invoke here and a post operation. Come on, keep scrolling. Here we pass in an object. So here we have an object. And we can go to the definition of the object, and all we're simply doing is setting up a class for our data member, our data contract with our data members to match all the string values. We set up the same thing in our JSON before we pass it in, right? And it's fairly simple exchange of data back and forth. Now, let me show you how these are called. So in our code, that would be a control F, please. Get all engineer. All right, so here's an AJAX call. That's going to go out and talk to our WCF service. You can see that here. I'll highlight it for you. So there's our AJAX call. We're going to make that to a GET operation, tell it that it's going to be JSON, and then parse out our results and bind those to a object and do what we need to do with them. The post is more than the highlighted text. Thank you. Okay. There we go. So doing a post simply requires that we set up our object first. This matches what's our data members in our data contract. Set those up, post the operation in JSON format, and then parse the results. Okay, and that repeats over and over and over throughout 3,000 lines of JavaScript. The pattern is very simple. You may choose to do it a little bit differently, but I like to go for things that are repeatable and that I can do over and over, and this seemed to work for me. All right, let's talk about building your remote web, provider web, self-hosted web, whatever it is we're calling it these days. Let's just call it the web. When you're thinking about constructing your website that's going to serve as your app, you need to think about, where am I going to host this? Is it going to be on-prem, running in an IIS website somewhere, or maybe it's PHP or LAMP or whatever it is that you're doing? Or am I going to host it in Office 365? If I'm going to host it in Office 365, I need to think about the fact that I'll be using OAuth. I've got to do some management around the authorization scheme. Fortunately, most of that stuff is pre-baked for you in Office 365. The whole Azure ACS connection is already made, which makes your life so much easier. But that doesn't exist on-premise. On-premise, our work really begins. We have to configure our apps to use a high-trust scenario, and I'm going to walk you through this high-trust scenario here in a little bit. It's rather lengthy, but not overly complex once you understand the process. And then we have to think about what kind of data are we going to be consuming from SharePoint. The SQL data we just looked at is totally separate from SharePoint. That's just SQL stuff that we're consuming. It could be any remote data source. But when we have to get data out of SharePoint, we have to think about what's the way we're going to interact with that. It's primarily going to be a REST query. We need to know how to construct the different REST queries for objects in SharePoint. For example, getting list data out of SharePoint requires one set of REST syntax, while using search or user profiles requires another set of REST syntax. Similar in overall construction, but you need to know how to set those up and pass them in, especially when you're doing list data from a remote web. All right, so let's get into the meat of the demo. I'm going to throw a whole bunch of code at you here in just a second. But before I do, let me show you how the app actually works that we're talking about. So here is our Office 365 site. We have deployed our app to that site. It's right here. And when we click on that app, it's going to take us over to our remote web, which is running as an Azure web role. Now, before we do, I'm going to fire up Fiddler here real quick because I'm going to use it to show you what SharePoint does when you click to go to that app. Watch the URL in the browser. Well, if you can see it, I know that's really small. Let me zoom in for you here. If you look up at the URL, you'll see that it's now gone over to the sphelpdeskdemo.cloudapp.net. That's Azure from SharePoint, and it passed in some parameters. Here you can see some parameters that it passed in, the host URL, et cetera. But there's some other parameters going in on the back, going on in the background that you really need to concern yourself with. And if I go over to Fiddler, I can see the parameters that it's passing in. And here's the meat of what's happening. SharePoint, when you set up your app and you use the standard set of tokens, which I'll walk you through, SharePoint is going to create a post operation that's going to post to your remote web application. When it does, it's going to send over some information, the host web, the app web, some other things. The most important thing of them all is what I have highlighted here, and that's the app token. This is at OAuth in action. When you're running in Office 365, your post will include that app token. When you are running on-prem, it will not include the token. There's a different way we have to do it on-prem. If we have that token, there's a helper file we can use called Token Helper that will handle all the communication with ACS for us to manage our authorization. On-prem, we have to do it a little bit differently. All right, so we're in our app here, and what we can see is a summary of issues that have been assigned to this particular user. We have our tiles here that have some summary information color-coded by severity. I can click on one of those tiles, get the pop-up. I can go into an issue and look at the issue. It's going to pull some details. Those user details that you see there are being pulled from the user profile store in Office 365, including the user's picture. And then we can update the issue, change status, do all those sorts of things here. One of the cool bits that I like is if I want to attach a KB article to this, I have a document library in my Office 365 site that contains my KB articles, so I can do a little look ahead query. Come on. Oh, bogus. It's supposed to do a look ahead query. It did not happen in this case. Wonderful. But I will show you in the code where that look ahead is happening, where it's calling back into the list in SharePoint to get a list of the documents. I happen to be logged in as an engineer, so not only can I see the summary view of the tiles, but I can also go to the details grid and see all of the pending issues. And down on the bottom, you'll see my geodata. So for each one of my users and for my engineers, I have a flag. I can click on them. I can get an information tile about that particular user. In this case, it's an engineer, so I can see the number of issues that have been assigned to that engineer. I can also look at my users and see where they're located to get information about those issues. Here's all the issues that belong to this particular user, and I can view issue details right from the map screen. If I want to assign an issue to someone, I can simply drag it from the grid, drop it onto my tile over here, and reassign that issue to a different engineer, and then it regens everything for me. All of these, by the way, the map stuff is obviously just the Bing Maps API. The carousel that you see in the grid are all open source jQuery components that we just wired all this integration into. So there's no special sauce going on there. I can also go in and do my user management here, set up some system options on my various categories and do things like putting in the Bing Maps key and setting push notifications and all that sort of stuff. Okay, pretty straightforward in terms of functionality, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. One of the things I want you to take note of is look in the upper left-hand corner. That looks a tad like SharePoint, and it is, using something called the UI controls or the Chrome control in SharePoint 2013. We have the ability to extend some branding from SharePoint over to our remote web app. So I can actually go here and just click and takes me right back into Office 365. Okay, and there's some extensibility you can do around that particular piece. It's not a full branding scenario. It's not as good as being inside of SharePoint with the quick launch menu and all that stuff sort of there for you. But at least it keeps some consistency for the user when they're going outside of your application environment or outside of your SharePoint environment to your remote application. There's some level of consistency there. All right. Now let's really dig in and see how this, how the various piece parts of this code are working. So first things first. One of the things that we have to do when we're setting up our application is we have this whole app registration process that we have to make happen in SharePoint in order to dev our remote apps. So we have to go actually to a special URL here called app reg new. Whoop, I better be in 15. All right, and we have to generate, oh, rock and roll. I love that. Right, maybe if I log out and log back in as a different user, I can actually see the page. Oh, there's some free marketing for me right there. How about that? All right, let's log out and log back in as a different user. SPC 2020 demo. If I can type today, we might be able to get into this site. Yay, there it is. Average new. New. Go. All right, there we are. So you need this page when you start developing your remote apps. You're going to have to generate an app ID and an app secret, and also set up the app domain and the redirect URL for your app. These are going to be used when you create your app manifest to actually deploy the app into SharePoint. Couple of things you need to know about here. The app ID and the app secret, you're going to have to take note of them because you have to have them in your web config for your file and you're going to use them elsewhere. So when you do generate those or paste in your own values, either one is fine, and set it a title, what you need to know is your app domain needs to match whatever your endpoint URL is. So in this case, sphelpdeskdemo.cloudapp.net, and your redirect URL must be HTTPS. It cannot simply be HTTP. That means if you are running in Azure, you need to have a certificate for your Azure web instance that you're running. For dev, you can use a self-signed cert, but when you go to production, obviously you want a full-on cert or you're going to get that certificate error message when you try and navigate. This information is going to be used when you create your app to deploy it into SharePoint, but it's also going to be used in your web config file for your application. And here it is. You can see right here I'm specifying my client ID and my client secret. These need to match up or the app won't function. For setting up the rest of the application is pretty straightforward. In terms of how our solution is built, we have a default.aspx page. That's the one that contains the grid and the tiles and everything else. Everything is pretty much in there and a whole bunch of hidden divs that are controlled by the JavaScript and the jQuery. So nothing really deep there. There's some other things involved here, such as the token helper that we have to use for authorization. And I'm going to explain just what in the heck RegisterGAC and GACUtil are doing in my solution a little bit later. Also, you can see I have the data service included. That's not necessarily how you're going to build your apps, by having your WCFs in the same solution or the same project as your web. But if you don't have it, you have to remember to deal with the cross-domain issues from JavaScript. If you're calling out of your app to a separate WCF service, you'll have to deal with that particular set of issues. So let's look at some of the SharePoint integration bits in our stuff here. So I'm going to go ahead and collapse this. Just to show you that because we're now doing JavaScript doesn't mean we're writing any less code than we did before. There's 2,885 lines of JavaScript in this solution. Aren't I lucky? I got to write it all with a little assist from someone who's sitting right back over there. All right. So let's talk about how we do our integration for getting list items and data out of SharePoint from our application. So if I do a search for underscore API, these are profiles, and here we go. All right, so I'm going to SharePoint, and I'm getting my list of items. This is the call that we made to try and do the item lookup, and it looks a little bit strange. First of all, we're calling an app web URL instead of a host web URL. This requires some explanation. When you create a SharePoint 2013 app, you're deploying it into the host web. That's the root site collection where the user is actually working with it. However, behind the scenes, when that app is generated and deployed, it creates a separate special site collection called an app web. That's where your app is actually going to run. And the reason for this is the app web functions much like the sandbox did in SharePoint 2010. It gives you an isolated environment in which you can run your code without blowing up the main website that you're supposed to be working on. So it's a little bit of protection mechanism in there. It does require you to think about that, though, when you're developing your solutions. In this case, it particularly impacts us because we have to make a special REST call in order to, or a specially formatted REST call in order to get our data. So I'm setting it up with the app web URL, not the host web URL. The thinking, you would think logically that the list data that I want lives in my host web, and you are correct, it does. But you cannot get to it that way when you're making your remote REST query using the request executor unless you construct that REST query and pass the bearer tokens and everything yourself. If you want to use the app request executor, which is what does all the cross-domain stuff for you, you're going to have to set it up in this particular fashion. And what we're going to do is use this funny SP app context site token here and pass in our host URL as part of the query. So what we're really telling it in our REST query is, I'm going to my app web, but here's the host web you really want to get your data from. And then the data service on the back end will pick that up and return your items. Once we have that constructed properly, we can then do our execute async, make that call, and handle the success or failure of that call as need be. One thing you need to know, if you've been working on with this in beta 2 at all, you did not need to have OData verbose specified on your REST calls. You must have that specified in RTM or your REST calls will fail. So getting list items is pretty straightforward. This REST syntax should look familiar to you from SharePoint 2010. We're just setting up an OData query. But there's some other services that we can avail ourselves of as well, specifically around search and user profiles. So let's talk about user profiles. So the way that I had to set this up, as strange as it sounds, is I wanted, when you create a new user, I want you to pick that user from all the user profiles in SharePoint. I just wanted to do a little type ahead lookup, put in the first few letters of the name, go out and get it from the user profile and send it back. What I initially thought I could do was make a blanket query to the user profile service and say, give me all the user profiles and let me pick the one I want. Au contraire, does not work that way. I had to use the search API to execute a search so I could search the people source to get a list of all the people and then go out and talk to the user profile. And in the course of doing so, I discovered something very interesting. In SharePoint 2013, scopes are deprecated. They're there, but they're not being used in the way that we used them in the past. Specifically, you can no longer execute a search through the REST API referencing the scope name. You have to reference a easy-to-remember GUID. So, if this looks a little strange to you in this REST query, it is a little strange. The source ID that you see specified here is source scope equal people. I'm just the messenger, kids. I don't make this stuff up. Okay, so once I made my search query and I got them back, I could then parse through all of the search results and get a couple of bits of information that would be helpful to me, such as the account ID and the username. So here you can see I'm just going out and getting the account ID back. And then in my next set of REST queries, I'm going to use this information, specifically this value here, which is the account ID. And now I'm going to call the SP User Profiles People Manager, and I can get the properties for that particular account name. So first my search, pardon me, then my call directly to the user profiles in order to get the data back. All right? No real magic there. You just have to know some of the intricacies of making those particular set of queries. Okay, So the rest of what's going on in the application, I won't bore you with 3,000 lines of JavaScript here, but the rest of what's going on is talking back and forth to SQL, making my calls to SQL, doing all the jQuery stuff to handle all the UI and so forth. We'll come back to this in a little bit when we look at our authorization piece and talk about how we handle context. Moving along, let's talk about Office. This was actually the easiest component to build. It's really straightforward to build Office apps in 2013. What you're really building, if you've done any Outlook programming, pardon me, in the past, where you were building Outlook panes, you're doing a similar thing here in 2013 for apps for Office, including them as task panes that you can reference from on the page. So here's how it works. You have in your remote web, you have a page. In my case, it's called office.html. That's all it is some HTML and JavaScript. It's just to render a few form fields and let me pick some parameters. You then put it into a pane that shows up on the right-hand side in Word or Excel or whatever it is that you're working with. And you call the Office.js files that allow you to do interaction with the document that you're currently working on. You go out and fetch your data using whatever mechanism you're using. In this case, using my REST and WCF service to go out and fetch data, and then you bind it into the document. One interesting piece that I discovered is in the Office app, and this may get changed in the future, but in the Office app, although the requests are made in a JSON format, the data that comes back is not in a JSON format. So you have to convert it in order to use it in your app. So let's look real quick at how the app for Office functions. So switching over here to our app for Office solution. Relatively straightforward how these are constructed. You can see here my solution is lengthy. There's a ton of stuff in it. It was really hard to build this. There's one XML document. That's all I need. Okay. On the other end, what this is talking to is an Office HTML file, which I have right here, which is also not very complex. Right? There's not a whole lot there. You'll see how that functions when we gin it up. Okay, here's what I'm specifying in this one. I'm just simply saying, what do you want the display name to be? Where are you going to get your little icon from? And in your source location, where are you going to go out and get this Office HTML file that I'm going to render? And you can see that here where I've specified the source location. I can also specify what type of Office products I support. For most things, workbook and document are interchangeable. If you want to do, there's a special one for Visio and also for Project, but it's a little bit different to work with those and the interaction in their API. But for using the base Office.js, you can pretty much work interchangeably with workbook and document. Okay, that's it. That's all there is to it. Nothing more. I can now press F5. It's going to gin up Excel, and it's going to open up my app, and there you see the task pane on the right-hand side. Okay. Pretty straightforward stuff. So you can see here, this is the HTML file. So this is actually being pulled from my remote web out in Azure and rendered in the task pane. And all I'm asking it to do is give me a couple of dates, 1/20/12, and I can go to 12/31. Whoops. So what is that, Mayan calendar? What is that? Okay, 12/31, 2012, and I can say import my data, watch my work blocks in Excel in the upper left-hand corner, bang, there's my data that just came out of my SQL service via WCF and put it into Excel. From here in Excel, you could generate some charts. You can see I don't have an extensive amount of data in here, but you can generate your charts and do whatever you want to do with this data inside of the Office document. In Word, you get essentially the same thing, which is just unformatted text that it puts into the body of the Word document. But the functionality works pretty much exactly the same. One thing you need to know is that in SharePoint 2013, we have the App Catalog and the Office Store. You have pretty much the same thing for your Office documents, but there is a file-based store for Office documents, so you can actually build and publish these and distribute the app file maybe to a network location, for example, and that would be your pardon me, on-premise app store. All right. So apps for Office, really straightforward to build. Okay. Functionality, the base functionality that you are going to use is in some JavaScript here, Office.js. And so this is the JavaScript to handle the functions that we're doing in that file. The one thing I want to show you is this right here. This is my actual call where I'm going out and getting the data and then putting it into the document. I put a notation on here because we have this something called a coercion type, which pretty much tells it what type of data you want to get returned. And as I mentioned to you, it doesn't support JSON. So I had to write a little helper function to take it and put it into an office array. It does support an array type. And so I had to reformat it to put it in there. So that's really the only tricky part of the office stuff. Otherwise, it's exceptionally straightforward. All right, let's move along and talk about mobile. Come on, that's a good quote, huh? Come on. All right. So mobile development. This was actually the first mobile app that I had written. I played with some of the demo samples but hadn't written anything for real. I was surprised by how easy it was to do because I'm an old Silverlight guy, old, you know, in our terms, but since it's gone now for the most part. So it was really straightforward to really dig in and get to working with it. It's a relatively simple UI in our case. We're going to display a summary of some issues. We're going to do a little map integration for the geo stuff. I want to pull the data out of the user profiles in SharePoint and get some of our list data from using WCF and REST. And then I want to do some push notifications in the app as well so we can have a little bit of live tile action going on. So pretty straightforward to put together. As of this particular time, be aware that there is not a phone SDK yet for Visual Studio 2012 in the final RTM'd version. I'm sure that's coming soon, hopefully any day now. But at present, you still have to write them in Visual Studio 2010 if you're doing phone apps. I should clarify that and say no publicly released. There is a Windows Phone 8 SDK, but it's not general availability yet to everyone. All right, so our phone app. Let me show you how it works, and then we'll dig a little bit into the code. So from here, I'm going to deploy to the emulator. There's no way I'm using an actual device up here live where certain people in this audience can send me text messages while I'm showing you a demo. That is not going to happen. All right, so here's our emulator. It's going to switch over now and bring up our app, and it's going to go out and talk to Azure in our web role and pull down a list of our issues using our REST and WCF. Hopefully, yes, all right, it's very cloudy today. I love it. All right, so here we have a summary list of our issues. And I can click on an issue, and you can see here that I can get the user image, some information about that user. I can also get the issue details show up there on my screen. And some information about that. I can directly call or email the person from here. I can also dig down and say, who is this person? I don't know them. Why should I be dealing with them? And so I can bring up a little bit more information about this user, such as their address and everything, and I can get their pin on the geo map here on the phone. Okay? So just some nice integration pieces to demonstrate the story. Now let's talk about how we built it. The base phone stuff is just pretty standard, common stuff. How many of you have built Windows Phone apps so far? A few? Okay, all right, a few out there. It's pretty standard stuff, basic WPF Silverlight type of navigation back and forth between pages and your binding and events that happen. In order to talk to my service, I had to do a little bit of setup in order to make that particular part happen. Let's see if I can find my main view. All right, so here's where we're actually doing the communication out to the cloud. I'm setting up a call, doing a URI builder, passing in some information. But this is calling my data service, the same data service that we're using for the rest of the application, and actually calling the exact same methods that I used in the other one. So I didn't have to rewrite any of my methods for my Windows Phone calls. I just had to reuse them. On the other hand, when I got my JSON back, I did have to write a fair amount of code. Because you have to parse through all that stuff. There's no native JSON.stringify in Windows Phone app development, so I had to go through and do all that stuff myself in order to get the issues bound to the tiles. So that piece is relatively straightforward. Then I also have on the details, I'm doing pretty much the same thing where I'm making a call, grabbing that individual item that's bound to that list and getting the details about that and then doing some navigation around. From a contact perspective, the only thing unusual going on here is the actual geo information. The rest of the stuff I'm pulling from the issue that I've already retrieved, but you can see where I'm calling Bing Maps here to do the geo integration. So setting up that call and making that call out to Bing Maps. Really straightforward stuff. Wasn't difficult to develop at all, but makes a nice piece of the overall story. All right, back to packaging. At some point, we've got to put all this stuff together and get it deployed. We got to move our database up into SQL Azure. This is not as straightforward as I first thought it would be. You can't just take a SQL database if you're a really lazy wannabe DBA like myself and decide not to put primary keys in all of your tables. You're going to have an issue when you try and move that thing to Azure because it will only accept tables with primary keys. There's a nice little CodePlex utility that you can run that will go through and script out your entire database for deployment up into Azure. We also have to package up our app and get it into SharePoint so we can start working with this guy, which means we have to set the parameters and the permissions in our app in order to get it deployed. Then we've got to get our web pushed out there to Azure. So we've got to get our Azure web role built and distributed up into the Azure framework. And if for on-prem, we've got to deploy our ASP.NET website. And finally, the Office stuff, put it into the Office store so that people have access to it. All right, so that's a lot of stuff. But let's look primarily at app packaging for our SharePoint app. Okay, so again, this is not a complex process. If you look over here on the right-hand side, you'll see my solution is relatively straightforward. I have an app manifest file. Now, I chose to separate my app from my web because I knew it was going into Azure. I was going to have an Azure web role deployment and whatnot. I didn't want those to be together. If you use the default out-of-the-box tools, they will create your app and your web together in one solution. Okay, not my preference. I like to keep those separate, but do what works for you, but I like to keep these simple. Okay, few things we need to know about generating our app manifest. We are running on a remote web. So because we're on a remote web, there's a few specific parameters that we have to identify. One, we have to give it our startup page. You don't have to specify this if you don't want. If you don't specify it and you use the token for remote web URL, it will, remember the app registration page we looked at? What we put down in there as that redirect URL, that's what it will use to send over to your app. The important bit is on the end, standard tokens. This is SP host URL, SP app web URL, all those things, language, all the things that it sends over in the post operation that we looked at in Fiddler. Next, we need to specify the client ID. Yes, I know the samples show you can do quote star quote. Try it, get back to me, let me know how that works out for you. Okay? I have only gotten this to work when I specify my client ID for a remote web. That's the only way I've been able to get it to function. Next thing we have to do is we have to specify our permissions. This is an easy one to forget because if you just gin it up with the out-of-the-box tools, there aren't any permissions set, you hit F5 and suddenly you can't read anything via REST. We have to specifically identify which sets of permissions we want to invoke. So here you can see I have a scope for SharePoint search and I have this funny right here, query as user ignore app principle. And I have a content site collection permission that I'm asking for. And then finally, I have social tenant, which is user profiles. Why it doesn't say user profiles, I don't know. But that's the one you need. For your permissions, especially when we're talking about the SharePoint site permissions, bear in mind that these are cumulative. So if I specify content site collection, it means I have the rights that I'm requesting, in this case read, for the site collection, the sites, and all the lists therein. Okay, spins down. If I do site collection slash site, then I only have access to that site, not the site collection. If I say list, then I only have access to a specific list and nothing else. So be careful what permission sets you assign. If you, by all means, be as restrictive as possible, you probably don't want to do all site collection read in a production application. But bear that in mind when you're packaging up the app, because those restrictions may prevent you from actually collecting the data that you want. All right, deploying this into SharePoint. You can F5 it, of course, and you can F5 to both Office 365 and to SharePoint on-prem, but in order to do so, you must have done a step first that we didn't have to do in SharePoint 2010, and that is you need to create a site collection using the developer site template. You cannot F5 deploy to a standard team site in SharePoint 2013. Flat will not work. You have to go out and create a specific site collection using the developer template. Once you've created a team site, you can't create a child site either using the developer template. Tried that, didn't work. Had to go in and create the site collection. Once you've created that, you can then F5 deploy to that site collection. So think of it, if you will, kind of like side loading. You're not going through the regular path to get to that application. You're really sneaking this guy in the side, so we're going to put him in a special site over here to deploy to. You can also deploy via the app catalog, on-prem or in Office 365. There is the full-on store that you can deploy to, or you can just do a on-premise or a private catalog that you can deploy to, and all that really contains is an app file that you're uploading to a document library. It's actually very simple. All right, switching back over. I just lost one of the screens. That's cool. Awesome. Okay, testing. Testing apps in SharePoint 2013. Just like testing everything else, right? It works on my machine. Substitute tenant for Office 365. Okay, testing's a challenge. Testing the phone stuff, yeah, easy. XAML, got it. Been there, done that. Testing some of the ASPXE stuff, yeah, okay. Testing the JavaScript stuff, well, if you've written JavaScript code, you know where I'm going with this one, right? Not quite so much fun. There's only so much F11 I want to do through every obfuscated jQuery function on the face of the earth. Testing is a bit difficult. Fiddler is your friend. I probably use Fiddler more in this application than I've ever used it before in my life to see all my JSON and WCF stuff going back and forth across the wire. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that we have a beautiful story around this. We do not have a beautiful story yet. If you choose to do TypeScript, the story gets a little bit better and easier, but we still have a testing problem. It's a secondary one. Don't worry about it. All right. Let's talk about our deployment options. Okay, on-premise. For deploying on-premise, we have to do this funny little dance called HITRUST. Okay, HITRUST is easy. There's no steps to it at all. It's just a couple of settings that you have to put together, right? It takes all of 5 minutes. Nothing to it. Baloney. How many of you have read my walkthrough on my blog for configuring HITRUST, right? It's about 8 miles long, and it's great reading when you have insomnia and can't sleep. Okay, so here's the story. The 2013 model was built, as we all know, around the Office 365 story. And in Office 365, we have access to Azure ACS running out in the cloud. Fantastic. That can be our OAuth provider. On-prem, not so easy to deploy Azure ACS on-prem, right? Bit of a challenging implementation, not exactly a package SKU you can order and just spin up in your own environment. So we needed a way to make this model work when you're not running out in the cloud. And the way that we do that is we basically set up the parameters manually to make SharePoint think that there is a trusted security provider out there that looks like Azure. And we're actually going to create some services and stuff to make it think that. But there's a process that you have to go through in order to get there first, which I found quite by trial and error, and learning this was a whole lot of fun. So I'm going to save you the pain of learning this on yourself, and I'm going to talk you through the HITRUST configuration scenario. All right, first things first. Let's switch over to an on-prem environment here. First things first, let's look at our solution. There's some things that we're going to need in order to make HITRUST work. We need a certificate for our site. Absolutely required. Our site doesn't have to run on HTTPS, but we must have a certificate for it. You'll see in my solution there that I have an exported certificate PFX file. It must have a password on it. The password can be password, but it must have a password. You must specify the certificate file location and password in your web config. You must also have a metadata document ASHX file. You can see that in my solution as well. Lucky for you, the code for that is cut and paste, and that's already up in the blog entry. That you can get all this to create an ASHX file, and you can reuse that in your other solutions. Okay, those two are a prerequisite. Once you have those, you can now generate a IIS website to publish your code to. When you do so, and you'll see I've got an IIS website over here for the help desk running. So I'm doing instead of doing a file deploy, so I'm having to run in debug mode all the time, I actually do a publish to push this out to a local IIS website. When you do it the first time, before you run the setup configuration scripts, you must leave anonymous enabled. You are going to need to have Windows authentication on this site. However, the first time that you do it, you must leave authentication enabled because the PowerShell script that you run has to actually go out and fetch that certificate and that metadata document. And if you don't leave anonymous enabled, it's not going to be able to do that, right? Secondarily, if you're in a Kerberos environment, remember, swap the two so the Kerberos is first instead of NTLM in your authentication provider choices for your web. If you're not, make sure they're the other way around, obviously. Okay, so you create a certificate. Self-signed local certificate is just fine in this particular case. If you have a full-on certificate, of course, that's fine too. Create your metadata document. Make sure you have your web deployed. Pardon me. And that it's anonymous. Once you've gotten to that point, then you now have the ability to publish your app, but you need to make sure that you have things set specifically in your web config. Whoop, make sure I'm in the right place here. So in my web config file, if Visual Studio will come back, here we go. In my web config file, you see I have the app settings section, and then I'm very creative with my choice of passwords. Here is my certificate. I have to give it the location. I have to give it the client ID and the client secret. This is the exact same process that we used in when we were deploying our app to Office 365. You have to go to AppReg New and generate your client ID and client secret, put them in your web config file. Now that you've got those running, you can then publish that to your website using the local publish from Visual Studio 2013 or Visual Studio 2012 to IIS. That part is relatively straightforward. You now need an app to get into SharePoint. But before you do, we're going to need to do some creative stuff on the back end. And this is where our PowerShell stuff comes from. There's a file, you'll see it here, called Configure High Trust. I've put all these commands together for you. Once you have your website deployed and functional, anonymous is enabled, you've got your certificate and your ASAX file, you have a site in SharePoint 2013, an on-prem web application. Once you have those prerequisites together, you can now run the script. Let's talk through it. I want you to notice something about the very first line. We're using a reference to a specific SP web. That means every time I want to gen a new one of these applications, I've got to bind it to a specific web. Okay? Scalable, not so much. Works, yes. Requires a lot of extra effort on our part. Okay, I then need to reference my metadata document file. This is calling the actual local website where it's running. It is going to make an HTTP call out there to get it. Then I have to set the realm and set up a new SP Trusted Security Token service using the metadata endpoint that we defined for the metadata document. That is the line here. Right? If you mess this up, and you will mess this up, when you run it again, you may not use the same name you used here. You must use another name. I think by the time I was done with this, I was up to like 97 or 98 in my naming convention. The next thing you have to do is register an SP app principal using the web and the realm that we have already established and talking to the SP Security Trusted Token service. Once we've done that, again with another display name that you must change if you mess this up, we can then finally go down and give the SP app principal permission here down at the end for the web. Simple, right? Of course, easy. Maybe not so much. Okay, once you've done that, now you're in good shape. Okay, now you can go into your app, set your client ID values in your app, set your permission values in your app, and deploy it into SharePoint. Before you do, though, You need to go back into your website and turn back on Windows Authentication. Why, Eric? Why Windows Authentication? I'm glad you asked. Let's have a look at our friend Token Helper. Okay, so token authorization. There's all this passing back and forth of tokens, but we don't have any tokens. We're on-prem. Okay, great. Can we still use Token Helper? Of course you can, using this particular method. What's in the name of that method? Windows Identity. What do we have to use to log in? NTLM. Yay, what year is this? So, when you're setting this up, what I did is I wrote my token handling for both Office 365 and on-prem so I could deploy in either location. So I've got a bunch of code in there that checks to see, is there a token? Okay, if there is, do the ACS thing. If there's not, do the local thing. The other thing that was really frustrating to me is that because it comes as a post operation from SharePoint to your web, when you want to go back or load a different page or do navigation, you can lose your context because the context token isn't there. So I cached the token in a cookie so that I can use it expired after 5 minutes or something short. But that gives me the ability to do in-app navigation without having to always worry about going through the token helper process and the Windows Identity thing. Once you do have a valid client context, you can then load your context for your .NET client-side object model. Now you can execute your REST queries and do all your other stuff, okay? So, just to review on the process, let's step back a slide real quick, okay? You're going to create your web, generate your certificates and your metadata. You're going to set your permissions on your website. You're going to do your registration in your on-prem, come back and set your parameters and stuff, run your configuration file, and deploy, okay? And again, I have a step-by-step write-up for that whole process should you need it. All right, deploying for Office 365. There's two ways to get, well, three really, when you count F5 deployment, but you have the public store, you have a private app catalog that you can use in Office 365. If you are the manager of your tenant, go into your admin section. The app catalog site collections does not exist by default. You need to set that up. So you need to go in and generate that up front, then you'll be able to deploy things to the app catalog. Remember to use the developer site template if you plan to F5. To Office 365. Bear in mind that your remote web must be running SSL. You do not have an option here. Remember to register that and get your app registration and put it in your application. Here's one of those parts where the story gets a little bit murky. I've already talked about app registration 3 or 4 times, okay? If you have the same app and you're moving it from local to dev to test to staging to production, guess how many app registrations you get to do? Local, dev, staging, production, Office 365, because all of them need to have a unique ID. All right? Again, I'm the messenger. Don't blame me. That's just how the process works. In my particular case, I had it running in Office 365, so I have one version of the solution. Then I have it running on-prem, so I have another version of the solution. Both have their own app reg IDs. Every time I deploy it to a new tenant, I have to go out and do it, get a new app reg. This does not apply, by the way, if you are putting something in the store. If you're putting something in the store, mean an app that people are going to download for free or that they're going to purchase and that you are going to license, you can go in and apply for an ID that applies to your application. And then once it's in the store, everybody who gets it, they don't need to have a specific ID for their tenant. Okay? This only applies to stuff that we're going to sideload or things that we have in development. And then remember to set all your permissions. Okay. Let's talk a bit about the Azure piece. We talked about preparing the dev site, but let's talk a little bit about the difference between these two animals, websites and web roles. In Azure, you actually have three options here. You can get a full-on virtual machine if you wish, you can get a web role, or you can get a website. Websites are the lowest hanging fruit. They're basically multi-tenant sites, shared hosting sites. You have no control over these things at all whatsoever, and worst of all, you have no idea, no way to do authorization unless you're using an Azure auto-hosted app, which uses a special implementation of Azure websites. If you just go to your Azure control panel and spin up a website, you won't be able to do the token handling piece. That's because Token handling requires the Windows Identity DLL. The Windows Identity DLL does not exist in the base website configuration in Azure, and you cannot deploy it. You can, however, in an Azure web role, deploy custom assemblies. There's a tricky way you have to do that. I'm going to show it to you right now to get your third-party assemblies like the Identity DLL up there. If you're using a VM, this is all moot because it's a full-on controlled VM that you have up in the cloud, so there's no worries about that. If you decide you want to go the auto-hosted route, my recommendation for auto-hosted is use it for Rapid application design, stuff that you're just going to gin up real quick. Because of the limitations on the Azure website model, you can't do anything big out there, and you can't have big databases in an auto-hosted, so there are some limitations around that. But for really quickly ginning up applications, it's a great solution because it's a single F5 click in Visual Studio to get into Office 365. It wires up your client IDs and does all that stuff. For you. All right, let's look at the Azure configuration and deployment. I actually was able to get to Azure today, which is fantastic. We're having a very cloudy day. I like that. And you can see it too if I remember to switch the monitor over. There we go. So here's my Azure control panel. So I got a couple of pieces here that I'm using for this. I have my cloud services. These are both for the help desk app. Here, these are Azure web roles, and then I have databases here. Here's my database for the help desk database, right? I'm not going to walk you through the Azure interface, but one thing that you do need to bear in mind is you do need to get your certificates set up in here in order for this to work. Remember that we have to have an HTTPS endpoint when we're registering our app, so make sure you get your certificates uploaded into Azure first. Yes, again, you can use a self-signed certificate for development. You don't have to spend $300 or whatever it is to go out and get an SSL certificate just to make your dev stuff work, but you will obviously need it in production. Okay, in order to deploy to Azure, you need to create a solution specifically for an Azure web role. And when you do, it's going to gin up this two-project solution. The first is your Azure component. The second is your Azure web role. This Azure web role is exactly the same as my full-on ASP.NET IIS website and my on-prem solution, with the addition of one little file down here at the bottom, which is my web role CS, which is required, right? And there's also not much to that. It's just an initializer. But you have to have it. The real trick is in the Azure configuration. So if I look at my service definition here, all right, this sets up my endpoints. I have to specify my thumbprint and stuff for my SSL and set my endpoints and ports and whatnot, right? But right here is the secret sauce. This startup command allows us to run a script that's deployed as part of our package. That script can then call out to some utilities to run whatever code you want. All right? In this case, it calls, you can probably tell by the name of it, it calls our friend GACUtil. So here's my register command, and I'm going to GACUtil the Microsoft Identity Model DLL, right? Because this is 2012, and GACUtil, like Access, will never die. It will be with us forever. Interestingly, so the good part about this is you can deploy any third-party DLLs that you need in the GAC. So if you're using a third-party set of controls or you have some common libraries that you use in your code development, all of those can be deployed through this mechanism using the startup command and referencing referencing your script file. Remember that all of these has to be set as content copy local so that they all get pushed up out into the cloud. For you. So that's the secret right here is in the service definition and running your startup. That particular command is not available to you in an Azure website. It's only available to you in an Azure web role, which is why you can't use it over there. Okay, so that's how we get deployed and up into Azure. All right, let me talk a little bit more about the token handling piece on the Azure side. Let's just look and see how that's configured over here. So now that I'm on this one, I'll come to the default and look here. Okay, so here you can see I'm setting up my cookies to store my host and context values that are coming to me in the post operation and deciding whether or not this should be a token request from ACS from Office 365 or if it's an STS local high trust, okay? So here's what we're doing. We're setting it up to trust all the certificates, and we're doing get context token from request. That's line 44. This is what's going to actually pull it out from the web form in the post operation. We are then setting an empty client context object, and now we're doing the actual work. So we're getting the context token, the access token, and the client context right here using these methods: read and validate, get access token, get client. Right, and then from there, I actually have then that last command. I have a client context I can now use when I pass it on to my .NET client object model to set my context value in place. Okay, if you're doing it in Azure, then you're going to need to do this first part. If you're doing it on-prem, you're going to need the second part, the get client context with identity. Okay. If you're going to do both, do what I've done here and put some intelligence in there so it can figure out which one that you're in. The samples are actually pretty good on this that you can walk through and see how this stuff is handled. Just remember, you do have to handle it, and you're going to have to do something about page-to-page navigation if you don't cache that context token. All right. So that's all I have for you today. I think we ended up just barely or just before time, so we'll leave a little bit for questions. I know that was a lot of information. If you would like to see a little bit more, dig down into the code of this app. I know we don't have a ton of time left, but this demo is running on the developer kiosk down in the Microsoft section of the show floor. I'm going to walk over there right now, so if you have some other questions on that, I'll be happy to answer them for you over there. I'm hoping that we will be releasing all this code soon. Not my decision to make, but hopefully this will all go out so you can get all this code and use it in your own solutions that you're developing. So I'll be happy to take any questions. In fact, if you have some questions, if you want to just go ahead and come up to the front of the room, then be happy to answer those. Thank you all for joining.